Last Sunday, I mentioned that Mark's is the oldest gospel, and Mark is the shortest gospel. And of its 18 chapters, 8 of them are spent on Jesus' final journey to Jerusalem for the Passion. It started for us on September the 12th, when on the 25th Sunday in ordinary time, we heard in the 8th chapter of Mark Jesus' first prediction that he was going to die. Just before that, however, he asked his disciples, "Who do the people say that the Son of Man is?" Some say a prophet, some say John the Baptist, some said Elijah, who we hear about in the first reading from the first book of Kings today. Many people thought that Jesus could be Elijah because Jesus' power and Elijah's power were very much the same, as we shall soon see. But it's also the case that Elijah didn't die. He was taken up into heaven, like the Assumption of the Blessed Mother or the Ascension of Jesus. And yet he made that trip to heaven 850 years before Jesus was born. The first similarity between Jesus and Elijah is control over the weather. Jesus was able to calm stormy seas just because he wills it. Elijah was able to declare a drought, and not a drop of rain would fall on Israel or Judah or the countries around Israel and Judah for 3.5 years. The reason why he declared that drought was a punishment on a faithless people. How many times had God told them, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Him alone shall you serve with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength." Repeated in last Sunday's first reading and gospel. And yet over the centuries, Israel was quite taken with the pagan gods and idols of neighboring countries and even of their enemies. Elijah was sent by God to proclaim this drought so that the people would realize who truly is the God from whom all blessings flow. Who is the God that makes it rain? Because for the people around Israel and Judah, and for an increasing number of people in Israel and Judah, they were worshiping the pagan deity Baal, B-A-A-L, a god of fertility, both for crops and for families. In fact, the widow of Zarephath, who Elijah comes to see today, she is not Jewish because she doesn't live in Israel or Judah. Zarephath is in what it today would be called Lebanon. She worships Baal, and she too wonders why her God will not make it rain. Thus, the people around Israel who are not Jewish, they're suffering along with the Jewish people. It will not rain on their land or hers. She cannot grow crops to feed her or her son, and that is why they're about to have their last supper, and then they're going to wait for death. That is, until Elijah shows up in her village and asks her for something to drink and something to eat. And even though she has so little, small amount of flour, only a few drops of oil, she decides that she will feed the stranger instead of herself or her son. That is her widow's mite. And that sacrifice of her whole livelihood is greatly rewarded by God through the prophet, because the jar of flour is not going to go empty. The jug of oil is not going to go dry for an entire year. The mother and the son and Elijah will reap these rewards. The book of Kings, chapter 17, records that Elijah stayed with them until the famine was over. This, of course, is another similarity between Jesus and Elijah. They both have the ability to multiply food. Jesus, of course, with the loaves and fishes, water into wine, and Elijah making it so there's more flour and more oil to keep on cooking and baking and eating for a year. But then if we were to read on after this passage ends, we would see the disaster struck that widow's family once again. It's bad enough she's lost her husband. But when that famine is over, after that year is up, her son also gets sick and dies. And then this pagan woman, she turns on Elijah and said, "Why do you trick us into believing in your God if you were going to kill my son anyway?" But Elijah's not done yet. He cries out to God, and her son lives again. A sign of things to come. Jesus, of course, before he was raised from the dead, he raised 3 other people from the dead. A sign that the resurrection was not only a gift from God to Jesus, but rather a gift for all of us from God through Jesus. A gift for all who believe, the chance to live again and forever. We see then that Elijah's words are prophetic, but so are his actions to prepare God's chosen people for the coming of a new Elijah. A greater Elijah, one who will control the weather and multiply food and raise the dead and cleanse the leper and make the blind to see, the mute to speak, the deaf to hear, so many other great miracles. Jesus is a miracle. The fulfillment of those prophecies is a miracle. But the focus today, of course, is on the widow, not so much on Elijah. the fact that she had so little and she'd give it all for someone that she'd never met. That in the same way as the widow Jesus sees at the temple treasury putting in her last two coins worth only a few cents. And he wants to contrast that with the Pharisees. This is the end of the 12th chapter of Mark. It's Holy Week. Jesus is soon to be in the upper room and then in a prison and then on the cross. And during those days leading up to the Passion, he spent his time in the temple debating with his critics, and they are many, the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, and the scholars of the law. They thought they were the froth on the cup, the creme de la creme of Judaism at that time. They had all the power, they had all the glory, but they weren't giving any of it to God. That is why Jesus draws the contrast between the widow's gift and theirs. The Pharisees want the places of honor. They want the titles. They want the accolades. But they're doing it for self-glory and vainglory rather than for the glory of the God who made them. And that is why their money that they put in the temporal treasury, in Jesus' mind, is worth less than the few cents this woman puts in, because they have so much more that they took from other people. And she barely has anything, but she's willing to give it all because she realizes it all comes from God. It all belongs to God. It should be used to give God glory, honor, and praise. But what does it mean when Jesus tells them, you're devouring the houses of the widows? He said that to the Pharisees, devouring the houses of the widows. For the centuries leading up to Jesus' time and for centuries after, Israel and Judah were governed by a patriarchal society. All the power and wealth was vested in the men. The women were not allowed to work. The women were not allowed to accrue wealth or own land. And thus, when a woman's husband died, there was a question, who's going to oversee the estate? And thus, they had to appoint a trustee or an executor. And, as misfortune would have it, the Pharisees always seemed to be somewhere around the grieving widows to make sure that they themselves would become the trustee of that estate. And all of a sudden, this woman would find that her husband's house, her husband's land, her husband's wealth that should have been used to care for her and for the family are redeeded in the name of the Pharisees, who were then going to put that woman out of her home and off her land and use that wealth for themselves. Thus, those copious sums that they could throw into the treasury, they didn't earn it, they won't miss it. Jesus has no use for that. Much like he threw the money changers out of the temple, he didn't want their money if they were stealing it from the least among us. It's a further reminder to us that Jesus is a king, but he chose to live among the poor. He is a prince that lived like a pauper. He did not choose to associate with the worldly, the wealthy, and the wise. Instead, he chose to surround himself with the widows, the orphans, the last, the lowest, the least, because he's a good shepherd that comes to seek and save the lost, wounded, and wandering lambs of this world. There's a lesson for us in this. Watching the widow who gives Elijah the last of her food, this widow in the temple who gives God the last of her coins, Jesus, he gives it all on the cross. His whole livelihood, his life, his blood, his bones, all of it for us, for the forgiveness of our sins and for our salvation. He had nothing left. We too must then realize everything comes from God. Everything belongs to God. Will we be a Pharisee seeking earthly honors and accolades so people will honor us and admire us rather than the God we serve? Or like the widows and like Jesus himself, would we realize that all we have, we've received as a gift. What we've received as a gift, we give as a gift. That everything belongs to him and we give him the glory, the honor, and the praise when we look after the widow, the orphan, the stranger, and all those in need all around us.